You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Meltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to yet another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. My name is Kelsey Mowat, and I'm coming to you from snowy Vancouver, British Columbia. Brendan Lear joins us now, and I know I'm going to get some laughs here. It is snowing yet again in my fair weather city.
It's beautiful here today. Right. Sunny, 0 degrees.
Yeah, see, I don't know how long the snow's going to stick, because it's pretty warm here as well, but we don't get snow very often in Vancouver, and this is twice now within a couple months. That's pretty crazy. I'm not too happy about it. It is.
It's tough.
It's a hard life I live, buddy. It's a very hard life.
I hope you didn't fall down your hill when you walked next door to Starbucks this morning.
Actually, man, I brew my own coffee. Nothing against Starbucks, but yeah. Otherwise, I'd be rather poor. I'd be destitute if I went to Starbucks every day.
You don't supplement your income through other agricultural activities like the rest of Vancouver?
No. No, and I resent the implication. Well, we could talk about British Columbia, one of British Columbia's more famous exports, but we won't. We've got lots of serious stuff to talk about today, and it's a jam-packed show. We have the Dean of Mean, Keith Jardine, coming on the program to discuss his recent win over Forrest Griffin. And then we have the Deputy Attorney General of New Jersey State, who is a counsel to the Athletic Control Board there and the commission there. Nick Lembo will be on the program to discuss with us a variety of things, including instant replay, which New Jersey State is implementing for mixed martial arts and boxing, kickboxing matches. And talk to
you know how hard it is to talk to an attorney general from New Jersey and not ask questions about the Sopranos?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I guess that'd be kind of tough, but you probably also think you're an idiot if you were to broach that subject. So maybe don't when we talk to him. So yeah, there's lots to talk to Nick Lembo about. We're going to also ask him a few questions about judging, the criteria for judging, if there's sort of a system of balance and checks, evaluation for judging, of course, with the recent IFL experience. Lots of people upset with Carlos Newton, Enzo Gracie, how that fight was scored. And then we also have Nabil Khatib coming on the program, who's going to be fighting at the upcoming January 13th Apex Fighting Championship in Gatineau, Quebec. He's going to be taking on Daryl Bonner, so we're going to have Nabil on the program as well. So I don't know if we're going to have time to do an outro, buddy. Might just have to have these guests on, three guests. You know, that usually means that people probably won't really be in the mood to listen to us natter on for 20 minutes, 15 minutes like we usually do at the end of the program.
Well, you know what they say, Kelsey, it's better to be thought an idiot than open your mouth and remove all doubt.
Yeah, I guess that might be true. I'd have to take some time to reflect on that, which probably makes me seem not so bright. And then, Brendan, I'll be coming out to Edmonton to cover the MFC February 3rd, so get ready for that, man.
And you're going to have to take your... remember to bring allergy pills, because you're going to stay over at my house.
Yeah, Lucy the dog sometimes bothers me, even though I love Lucy, don't get me wrong.
Kelsey is the only person in the world who's allergic to my hypoallergenic sheepdog. It's a little known fact about Kelsey, actually, for you, his legions of fans, that not only does he sleep in a sensory deprivation chamber, but he was also raised in a germ-free igloo in northern Canada. So he has is hyper allergic to many things.
Yeah, I think if I'm ever like very rich and powerful, I will be very Howard Hughes-esque, coming from a similar background and as far.
Well, you
as
already got a good start there. With those jars of urine.
Yes, yeah, and my spruce moose, or... I'm just adding. Anyways, I could get sidetracked. It seems like this is an opening where we could very easily get sidetracked, so then I could go on about that Simpsons episode with Mr. Burns opens casino. Brilliant, brilliant. But that's neither here nor there. Let's get into the MMA discussion. We got tons coming on, so stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame.
For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League kicks off its 2007 inaugural season Friday, January 19th at the Oracle Arena. See Maurice Smith's Tiger Sharks battle Marco Huas's Condor. Plus, sibling rivalry comes to life as Ken Shamrock's Lions square off against Frank Shamrock's Razor Claws. Be there Friday, January 19th, 7:30 p.m. at the Oracle Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 510-625-8497 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is the Dean of Mean, Keith Jardine. And Keith, I got to tell you, man, this is the first time you've been on our show, and that's got to be one of the better nicknames. I think Brendan would agree.
I'm in full agreement.
Yeah. Keith, I would imagine that you're probably getting sort of sick of the media by this point. Has it been a pretty busy week for you, dealing with interviews, etc.?
Yeah, I've been real busy. Pretty crazy, actually, but... It's cool, man. It means I did a good job, so I don't mind at all.
Yeah, and of course, Keith Jardine coming off the big win over Forrest Griffin at UFC 66, stopping Forrest in the first round. And Keith, my first question for you, going into the fight, a lot of people were saying that you definitely were going to be one of the toughest tests for Forrest Griffin, if not his toughest test. Yeah. And yet, he was still somewhat of a slim favorite. How did that feel for you to get the win as a slight underdog? Did that mean something to you, or is that something that just you don't really consider?
No, it meant a lot. Well, being an underdog and stuff, I don't care about that. It meant a lot to me to win, though, of course, because it makes now all of a sudden I'm ranking real high in the UFC, and legitimately I can get a title fight anywhere now or a few fights down the road. It just puts me in a conversation, and that's what I wanted to, you know, just cure my future here and put myself up there.
Keith, I have to tell you first off that I was 5-for-5 in my picks on the UFC, and Kelsey was only 4-for-5. And I won't mention which one mention which one he didn't get right.
Which one?
I think you could probably figure it out from Brennan's side.
5-for-5. That's horrible, man. That's like all time low, it must be.
I know you probably heard some disappointing things in your life, you know, your first dog dying and stuff like that, but. That's got to be the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
My first question to you is: I got to thank you. I got to congratulate you on the win. I got to ask you about the aftermath of the fight, and it's kind of interesting in that people are really talking about. People really seem to be affected by the way Forrest took the loss, and I actually thought it was kind of interesting to see someone be, you know, sort of honest and open in their emotional response to a loss like that. But he's been criticized quite a bit, and people are being kind of hard on him. What do you think about that? And what did you think? I know you were too busy celebrating your victory, but reflecting back on it, what do you think about that kind of criticism?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know what was going on until I heard it, and I haven't seen it yet, but. I think you've been reading without comments and stuff like that, and you know he's pretty broken up. He's worked real hard to get where he is, and he had everything to lose in this fight, and he did, and now he has to start over. So I understand, but the most important thing is I've talked to him a few times after the fight, and he's nothing but honorable and respectful to me. And Forrest is a great guy, man, and people show his actions against he wears his emotions on his sleeve, you know, and that's just the way he is, and that's why his true fans like him, you know.
Yeah, and going into this fight, Keith, we had Forrest on the program, and he pretty much flat out said he was going to come out standing, see where he was at with you, and I think everyone was kind of billing it as a stand-up war, and it certainly transpired that way. And then you got the big shots in and ended the fight fairly quickly. Obviously you were probably expecting Forrest to stand with you, but were you content with that? I mean, was that your whole game plan throughout the whole fight?
You bring up it. Yeah, that's the way I wanted to go, you know. I have a lot of confidence in my boxing and kickboxing. I've had six months since my last fight to clean up my game a little bit, get a little tighter, work my power a little bit. You know, I've had 4 pro boxing fights, 1 pro kickboxing fight. I have a lot of confidence on my feet, and I knew that if he was down with me, I would eventually get to him.
Keith, we just talked to Diego Alves on the show recently, and he was talking about falling back on his experience with Muay Thai and how that helps him quite a bit in MMA, especially in expecting an absorbing punishment, getting a sort of sense of what that feels like to check kicks and get kicked hard and to get punched hard, of course. Now, you find that your professional, that your training in kickboxing and boxing, especially at the professional level, has also sort of steeled you to that in MMA?
Yeah, absolutely. And when Wolfsburg came out, I had a feeling he would and tried to prove a point by winning the leg kick battle. It just, honestly, it made me feel more comfortable and more confident, actually. And you fall back on all that experience, and it's really helpful.
Now, you mentioned, the fact that this is probably the biggest win in your career, and it really definitely catapults you up in the 205 division. And you look back at your UFC performances, and you've got some very notable wins, and the loss to Stefan Bonner. I wanted to ask you about that. It's your first time on the show. You felt that you won that fight, Keith? Did you think you were robbed of decision against Bonner?
I wouldn't say robbed, but I felt like I did enough to win that fight. It was a close fight, I learned a lot of lessons in that fight, and lessons I took with me in this Forrest fight. That fight helped make me who I am today, so I don't feel bad about it at all.
So with these back-to-back wins now, where do you see yourself at in the division? Do you think that you're worthy of a title shot here, not too far around the corner?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Forrest was the number one contender. I thought he, watching that fight several times, scouting Forrest, I'm sure he won he beat Tito in that fight. No doubt in my mind, he won that second and third round. Mm-hmm. So the way I beat him, I think there's no question that puts me in the conversation right away.
And Keith, do you look forward to a challenge like that? It seems like the 205ers that are mentioned in the list of contenders now are fairly up and coming fighters, and the champion, of course, is probably the best 205er in the world. Do you feel confident, and do you look forward and anticipate a fight like that, or are all you younger guys just kind of standing back like who's going to be the next Vestal Virgin thrown into the volcano?
You said it just right, man. But for me, I think I match up well with anybody from top to bottom. I think Chuck, the way it looks right now, Chuck's by far ahead of any challenger. The way he beat Bob Lue, the way he beat Tito, is just like I heard someone say, he's like Tyson in the late 80s, I'd love to be the guy thrown in the fire, just to get a chance to fight a legend, that would just be an incredible honor, and I think my style would match up all right against him.
Well, let me ask you about that. Did you get a chance to see Chuck's fight with Tito then after yours? Did you watch the fight?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what were your thoughts on that? There's a lot of people sort of speculating on what Tito's game plan, et cetera, was, and it looked like he was incorporating some leg kicks, and maybe that gave Chuck a little bit of a moment to pause somewhat, but, Tito mostly continued to shoot from the outside. Was there anything in Tito's game plan, Keith, that surprised you at all?
No, I thought he had a great game plan for that fight, for Tito. He wanted to wear down Chuck a little bit and try moving a little bit closer for the takedown, but that's hard to do against Chuck. You don't want to stand in front of him because you're going to get hit. So I think Tito's a great fighter, but Chuck is just has the perfect skills to match him. He's like Tito's Achilles heel. He has incredible takedown defense and phenomenal boxing, and he just this is a perfect opponent for Tito. So I feel bad for Tito in that matter.
Keith, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your use of leg kicks recently, and you seem to be one of the guys in the last couple of years that's had real success with your leg kicks. Is that something you've always trained, or you found that you've a technique that you've become more proficient in, or do you tell us a little bit about the incorporation of those especially your vicious leg kicks into your repertoire?
Thanks, man. A lot of credit to my kickboxing coach, Mike Winklejohn, works with me a lot on that. It's not something that I go out and look for. I don't go out and look to land a lot of leg kicks. It's just basic kickboxing. You start with starting with jab, you start with leg kicks, and it's surprising how many people don't know how to check them. So you don't hot check a leg kick, then I'm going to stick with it, you know. Honestly, it's not my favorite thing to do. I just, if people don't know how to defend it, I'm going to stick with it, you know. I'd rather knock somebody out with a good hook or something like that, you know, but, yeah, whatever.
Keith, we've had a couple of your fellow Team Jackson teammates on the program, Evershot and Joey, and you know, every time, both times those guys are on the show, it just seems like continually, slowly but surely, Team Jackson's getting the credit that it deserves, but still it's somewhat, not overlooked perhaps, but maybe not mentioned as much as it should be when one looks at the successes of people like yourself, Rashad, Diego Sanchez. How do you guys feel as a member of Team Jackson? Do you think that the team's finally getting the credit that it deserves?
Yeah, we're starting to. You forget Nate Marquardt. I think he's the best 185 in the UFC right now. Yeah. No, we're getting it. You know, we live in Albuquerque. We live kind of. We're not in the center of the MMA right there, and that's why I like it. But I don't know. Maybe we should hire a publicist or something. But we don't really care about that. As long as we're getting fights and we're all working towards the title, that's our goal. And I think we're doing a good job. So the credit will come when we do all that.
Well, you fought Rashad before in the Ultimate Fighter show. Has there been any discussion between you two that the fact that you guys are having all the success in the light heavyweight division, and if you guys even discussed the possibility or with UFC or anything like that at all, that you two might have to fight, or is that something that just you're not concerning yourself with at this point?
No, we talk about it because we're starting to get these questions, and that's been our goal since the beginning. Is if we weren't doing that well, then no one's going to be asking us for it. We're going to fight again. But no, you hear a lot of Chuck and Tito used to be friends and train. We're actually real friends. Shaw's one of my best friends, and that's just out of the question. We're not going to fight anytime soon. You know, anytime ever.
Keith, I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about the Jackson camp and your guest training partner of the past year, GSP. You guys helped him get ready for his fight against Matt Hughes. Tell us a little bit about I don't want to seem like I'm trying to bring up a controversy here, but there seems to be a little bit of a weird vibe that GSP has been closely associated with you guys in your camp, but that possibly his next opponent is going to be Diego, and it seems like Jackson has nothing but great things to say about GSP. Is there some kind of weirdness about that, like having both those guys being close to the camp?
I would say weirdness. It's just like it's a little unfortunate because we met George and it just, man, we clicked right away. Our team and George were the same kind of people, and we really want George to be on our team. We flew to Montreal to help him train for his Matt Hughes fight, and I can't tell you there's no better guy than George. So the thing with him and Diego is like it's just gonna have to work itself out, and we'll just see what happens. It's just kind of unfortunate. It's hard to really say that much about it because we love Diego and we love George, but you know, they're two. It's different than me and Rashad. You know, me and Rashad are friends from the beginning. As we climb the way up, those guys are just two of the best fighters in the UFC right now. I think the fans are going to demand that they fight. So, you know, we'll see how it works itself out.
And, of course, with GSP, it was announced that he's injured his knee and won't be able to fight Matt Serra in February. And we talked to Stefan Patry earlier this week and reported on the FCF website and Stefan had said that George injured his knee originally training with you guys. Were you around for any of that, Keith? When
yeah, yeah, he was down in Albuquerque helping me train for Forrest, and it was just like just an unfortunate thing. We were doing some takedown drills or something like that. It was pretty unfortunate, but you know, I got a lot of mental training from him more than physical training anyway. I picked his brain a lot, talked to him about the way he approaches fights and stuff like that, and he actually helped me out a lot for this fight with Forrest.
It's interesting that you say, Keith, that you guys are the same types of people, and it seems that almost excluding no one, that the fighters in the Jackson camp are impeccably respectful and well-wishing. There's not much trash talking that comes out of there. Is that something explain how guys in MMA are typically cocky and have a lot of machismo and bravado, how almost all of you guys are incredibly soft-spoken and almost, in a sense, diminutive. Does Jackson collect fighters like that, or do you sort of learn from his example, or describe that a little bit to me?
Thanks a lot. Greg would love to hear that right there. You know, it's just Greg Jackson. It's all about Greg Jackson. People meet him. I don't know if you met him before. He's just an incredible, incredibly smart, caring guy, and people kind of gravitate to him. Back in 2000, I was thinking about doing MMA, and I drove down to Albuquerque once to meet Greg, and made up my decision. I'm going to move down to Albuquerque and train with Greg. And a lot of people have similar stories. It's all about Greg Jackson, you know, and you're right, we don't let the wrong kind of people come into our camp. You know, we don't want to ruin what we have going. You know, nobody has egos. We don't keep tallies of who taps out who or who did better than who what day. You know, it's just an incredible training environment.
Anytime I've talked to Greg, often it's been quite early in the morning because I'm trying to, you know, get a hold of one of you guys and get a phone number or whatnot. And he's always really nice. But, I mean, is he just that nice all the time, Keith? Or is he just, like, an incredible morning person? Because you'll get him on the phone first thing in the morning and he's, like, you know, fully energized. Yo, it's a great – life's beautiful, buddy. And you're just kind of like – I'm just, you know, slowly slogging out of bed, drinking coffee.
No, that's Greg Jackson right there. It's very annoying to me sometimes, especially if I'm in a bad mood and I'm cutting weight, because he's just too much energy and too happy-go-lucky for me sometimes.
Well, we talked a little bit about the 205 division, and you mentioned that, you know, you want to keep moving onwards towards a title shot, and with the additions of people like Quinton Jackson now. The division certainly gets more interesting. Is there anyone, I know, Keith, that you might not necessarily want to call someone out, but are there a couple fights that you look at that you think that you match up well against and could immediately sort of get you that shot with Chuck?
Yeah, you know, well, first of all, I know I'm not going to get that. I think this fight that I just had qualifies me right away. So, but from the top down, I think I match up well with anybody. They're all different matches up. Different matchups, but I haven't thought about it yet. I'm still on vacation. I'm heading back home tomorrow to help Nate and Rashad train for their fight, so honestly, I haven't thought about it much. Before this fight, I haven't looked past fours at all, but I think I match up well with anybody from the top down, and we'll see what happens. I have no expectations right now.
What was your initial reaction when the news came that Quinton was coming to the UFC?
I kind of thought it was just a matter of time. Actually, it's a logical move.
Yeah.
Hey, one thing you guys, you know, we're talking about Greg Jackson and my coach, Mike Winklejohn, my kickboxing coach. You know, Mike Van Arsdale's been down helping out. He's been like my strength and conditioning coach lately. He's made a world of difference here too.
Oh, okay.
Keith, did you grow up? I just noticed for the first time that they attributed your birthplace as Butte, Montana. Did you grow up in Montana?
No. My dad's a miner, and I think he was working at a mine at the time I was born in Butte. I did my growing up, a small part of my childhood in a small town in Oregon, actually. Then high school in Southern California. I've been all over the West Coast.
All right.
I was going to ask if you. If you missed winter at all, but apparently not.
You know what? Oregon's pretty bad too. Albuquerque's a perfect place. We get some snow at the most the last couple of days and get enjoy it for a little while. Then it's gone. You know, I love the snow, but you know, I think I got that out of my system.
Well, Keith, my final question for you now: you're starting to see some money coming about in MMA, and you see some shows like UFC All Access and. Chuck Liddell or Tito or whoever it may be, and it seems like each fighter's got some pretty cool toys available due to their success. If there was an all-access showdown in Keith Jardine, would you have a pretty fly crib there, buddy, or what would we see?
not even. I prefer it pretty simply back home. I like to keep it that way. I got a little house, a simple car, No, I'm a pretty simple guy.
I like the footage of you running hills, man. My girlfriend was agonizing watching that. She could only imagine how hard that would be. It was on the preview of Forrest Griffin Show when you guys run up those sand hills. That's got to be tough.
Yeah, you know, it is tough. I haven't seen that, so I'm not repeating myself. The thing with those is we run a lot of hills all over Albuquerque. We're in a high altitude there, but those sand hills, because of the deep sand, it's just incredible. It's like the hills fighting your back as you're running up, and it's quite a mental as well as physical workout.
Yeah, I'd pay.
Did you say agonizing, Kelsey, or fantasizing?
Agonizing. Actually, Brendan, while we're talking about sand hills, I'd pay $100 to watch you just run up sand hill once, man.
Well, thankfully in Canada, you wouldn't have to pay for my my coronary care after that.
Yeah, that's true. See, we're Canadians, Keith.
Keith, I got to ask you about obviously you're going to have an upcoming UFC on show inside the UFC or whatever it's called. So Matt Hughes basically gave the ring girl third degree burns and then forced her to jump a quad with no helmet on. So what do you have in store for her when she comes and visits you?
He gave her bad burns. I don't know if I want to know about. We'll take her to the sandhills, you know. Take her to the crest. I don't know much about that, man. But
is there some kind of death sport in Albuquerque that you guys participate in?
Yeah, it's running with Greg.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's all right. If you could get her to run with you in the snow up and down hills, I'm sure Spike would love it.
Yeah.
I think Greg just took to the crest. It's like 11,000, 12,000 feet. I think he just took Nate and Rashad and Joey up to the crest and had them running in the snow, like almost waist deep at points.
That'd be interesting to see.
He's maniacal sometimes.
Well, Keith, we appreciate you coming on the show. Like, I know you've been doing a lot of media, et cetera, and you probably want some downtime to relax after the big win, and you definitely have earned it. So take care of yourself, man, and we'll talk to you again sometime.
All right, thanks,
Beth. Okay.
See you, Keith. Thanks.
The best stuff for MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League continues its 2007 inaugural season, Friday, February 2nd at the Reliant Arena. See Boss Rutan's Anacondas battle Pat Miletich's Silverbacks and Antonio Inoki Sabres face off against Don Fry's Scorpion. Plus, the super fight between MMA legends Matt the Law Lindland and Carlos the Ronan Newton. Be there Friday, February 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at the Reliant Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 713-629-3700 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
Hey, this is Bill, the Butcher Mahood. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Mr. Nick Lembo, Deputy Attorney General to New Jersey State and Counsel to the New Jersey State Athletic Control Board. Nick, how are you doing today?
Very good.
We appreciate you coming on the show, of course. I was telling Brendan that I don't know how we're going to top someone of your stature on the show. We might have to get the Secretary of the United Nations for tomorrow's show or something. It's definitely an honor to have you on the program. Thanks for coming on.
It's a pleasure to be here. Anything for Full Contact Fighter.
I thought this was Kofi Annan. I got my days mixed up.
Well, actually, he's no longer the Secretary of the United Nations, but we can talk about that after, right?
Sure enough.
Nick, the first thing I wanted to ask you about an announcement from New Jersey State this week in regards to the instant replay, and that it's definitely an interesting twist, I guess, for mixed martial arts, and I'm definitely, from reading the press release, encouraged by some of the things that it says. Maybe for some of those people that didn't get a chance to see that press release, can you just give us a brief summary of what the New Jersey State is going to use instant replay for, and what was sort of the impetus behind getting instant replay for mixed martial arts fights?
Well, basically, it was for across the board for all the combative sports that we cover, so it's a pretty big boxing venue, Atlantic City, too, so it would be for completely at their option. They'd have to notify us before the show if they would want to use instant replay, and then the calls of, or lack of calls of the referee for things such as slips versus knockdowns or accidental versus intentional fouls, those things would be reviewable by the commissioner at ringside, because we've noticed, I guess the key is New Jersey is a state, and not all states have it, where a referee's call is appealable. So basically what happens if you believe there was a missed call by the referee, you file paperwork, the commissioner gives you an initial level of review, it's a written response. If you're not happy with that response, you're entitled to an appeal before the full board members. So the process can take some time, and with the amount of money that's at stake for these fighters and the prestige, we just figure that possibly it could be done that night of the event instead of waiting and going through this lengthy written process, because, you know, basically Boardwalk Hall, they can show you the replays right during the intermission in between a round, or if you watch HBO or pay-per-view, you can see five different angles of the same punch or action at issue. Right. And maybe this could all, you know, anything controversial can get settled in between a round.
Now, at the actual point of the instant replay, upon watching that, who would be making the decision? Would it be the referee, the judges, or would you have Athletic Commission board members there?
It would be Commissioner Hazard.
Okay.
He'd have a monitor at ringside. And just to mention his background, for some people that don't know Commissioner Hazard, he was an amateur boxing champion. He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu himself under Moses Powell. He's also a black belt in karate, and he was a long time professional boxing referee and a boxing judge for world title fights, and he's been the commissioner since 1985.
Okay.
So could you explain a little bit about the details of how you would see the instant replay working out? So, if, for instance, I'm just trying to distinguish for myself conceptually between an instant replay that people would be familiar with in hockey or football, and an instant replay in the way you're using the term here. So, if a referee, for instance, maybe deducted a point from a fighter for a perceived foul, then during the period of time between rounds, the commissioner could actually review that call and correct it before the judging at the end of the fight? Or would this be something that would be more appropriately used after a fight was finished if someone claimed that there was some kind of problem or poor judgment during the fight? Then it would be result in a timely fashion rather than an extended drawn-out fashion.
No, basically this would happen as the fight proceeds, and possibly it could be settled before the round is over. Let's say if something happens in the first minute of the round, that's at issue. The chief second could come over and alert the commissioner and say, I'd like that reviewed. I don't think that was a foul. I don't think that was a point deduction. I don't think that was a knockdown. Something to that effect, and then as soon as the technology would be there for the commissioner to review it, possibly he could review it before the round even ended. If that's not possible, he would have the 1 minute rest period in between rounds to review it, and an additional 2 minutes. So it would be a maximum of 3 minutes of stopping a fight, which would be an additional 2 minutes plus the rest period. So I guess if it's used to its farthest extent, it would stop the fight for another 2 minutes.
So we could actually see a stoppage in the action to get a review on a foul or anything that the ref might have done.
Yes, and the reason why we wouldn't wait till the end of the fight, because that may affect the strategy of how the fighter would compete. He may think at that point, you know, I'm behind on the cards because of that point deduction, because of that foul, or because of something that happened, I have to fight differently. So figured we could get it resolved then, and hopefully with a maximum of 2 minutes, you know, hopefully these things can get resolved during the rest period, so it wouldn't even take any additional time. But right now, we put an additional 2 minutes there just to be able to get the feeds and the technology together. But, you know, we're open to change. I mean, when we write these things, we're just trying to adopt things for the betterment of the sports, but they're not written in stone. I mean, we'll be open to other people's ideas and complaints. You know, actually on one of the websites, I thought somebody came up with a good idea that wasn't expressly noted in the press conference. I mean, sometimes there's people tap and the referee doesn't see it, and you know, then, you know, they get out of the maneuver and then don't admit that they tapped. You know, that may be something that could be reviewable.
Yeah.
Can I give you an example that probably a famous example that we've seen in the last few months, and just to get you to reflect on, did you see the Matt Hughes George St. Pierre fight?
Yes.
You did? Okay. So in that fight, I was just wondering how the replay would have worked. In the fight, in the first round, St. Pierre supposedly hit Hughes with a kick to the groin, and Hughes was allowed a certain period of time to recover from that.
Correct.
And then shortly after, Hughes hit St. Pierre hit Hughes with another leg kick, and that Hughes claimed would be a low kick, or that was a low blow as well. And on review, it wasn't. Do you see? And so Hughes was allowed to recover from that kick as well. Do you see instant replay coming into a situation like that in any way?
It could be. Yeah, it certainly could. The referee could make the call that either that was or was not an illegal blow, and if the chief second for whichever fighter that disagrees with it could come over to the commission table, which is right there at ringside, and say, I want that reviewed, and as quickly as it could be reviewed, it would.
Yeah, and immediately, I guess, you know, the knockdowns or slips would pertain more to boxing or kickboxing, and I think for mixed martial arts, the reviews for accidental fouls or deliberate fouls and then legal cuts immediately comes to mind. And of course, as that person mentioned, which is a great point about the tap outs. What's been the reaction so far, Nick? Have you had a lot of support from promoters? You mentioned that this will be at the discretion of the lead promoter. So far, have promotions that sound like they're going to get on board and utilize this?
Well, we try to work with the promoters too. So, you know, informally, we called, you know, some of the promoters in boxing, some of the sanctioning bodies, some of the people that work or have hold shows on a regular or fairly regular basis in New Jersey, and we asked them what they thought about it. Overwhelmingly, they thought it was something that should be tried, something that they seemed happy with. So we did proceed with it. And, you know, I've been looking at a lot of the calls to the office have been from people in the industry are overwhelmingly in favor of it. You know, on some of the message boards and chat boards, things like that, you know, I'd say the response is very mixed, but we'll see how it goes.
Now, another thing I wanted to ask you about was in regards to the UFC, and there's been a lot of discussion in the last few years with people taking issue with different interviews or articles where the UFC or Dana White talks about the history of sanctioning and that organization being responsible for amending certain rules and in getting sanctioning across the United States. And most recently, that's come to bear again with the 60 Minutes special on the UFC, the IFL, mixed martial arts as a whole. And Nick, I read your letter that, or an article that pertained to you sending a letter to CBS. In regards to that story, for those people who maybe didn't get to hear too much about it, maybe fill us in on what you sort of took issue with in that CBS story.
Oh, I thought it was great at the outset to see mixed martial arts on 60 Minutes. It's a great sport. We want to see it grow, and we thought we'd taken a lot of efforts to help the sport in New Jersey. However, with where when the Fertittas took over the company from the former owner, SEG, and Bob Meyerowitz, that they, Dana White basically said he wrote out a set of rules and he realized he needed sanctioning from the athletic regulatory bodies, and that after he wrote these rules, you know, he sought out the athletic commissions and got them to accept these rules, and that's basically what led to the explosion of the sport. Now, initially, I should say I have nothing against Dana White at all. There's nothing personal. I think UFC's done great things for the sport. I watch every UFC like any other fan would, but that's not really what happened. And it was said once, twice, it was starting to be picked up, and then it seemed it was routine, and especially he went on ESPN and made those statements, and then it started getting to the bigger media outlets. And at that point, I just thought it should be corrected because there's a lot of younger fans. I know, actually, if you look at Full Contact Fighter archives, you can see very detailed coverage of the purchase of the UFC and the New Jersey rules and the implementation of the rules and the initial regulation of the sport in New Jersey, and it's very accurate. But unfortunately, I think, you know, with the success too of the Ultimate Fighter, there's a younger fan base that wasn't around or isn't aware or wasn't reading Full Contact Fighter at that time, and have you know, the improper perception that they're only aware of what Dana's inaccurate and incorrect statements are on this issue. And as far as the internet, you know, sites like Full Contact Fighter and, you know, MMA Weekly and all the other sites, I don't want to leave anybody out, but like, you know, Eddie Goldman and Jeff Taylor and Ivan Trembau, they've all done a great job covering the correct history of the sport and also pointing out, you know, Dana's mistakes on the issue. But basically what happened is the SEG at the time had some rules in place under Bob Meyerowitz, like in this piece that, you know, Dana took credit for groin strikes, you know, making that illegal. Groin strikes, I think, were illegal since the second. The statements on 60 Minutes was, you know, in came the rules with Dana White, and then, you know, the commissions followed and he flowed. Well, I mean, the point is that several of these rules were already in place under Meyerowitz on the old UFC. He ran a couple shows under smaller state commissions that were regulated and that were sanctioned. Basically, rules were developed for a show in Quebec, Canada, which didn't come to pass. Jeff Blatnick basically was the main author of the rules and should get credit for it. And then they were tried to pass them in California. California, the Athletic Commission did pass the rules, but they could not get the monetary funding to be allowed to regulate the sport. At that point, we were approached in New Jersey, and we had been following the issue, and we, you know, sort of added on to what was written to the rules and tweaked the rules a little bit and put them in a comprehensive format to cover every aspect of the sport. And then at that point, we allowed SEG under Bob Meyerowitz to have a show in New Jersey, which he did at the Taj Mahal, and it was very successful. And then at that point, in between the second show that was held in New Jersey, that's when the purchase with Zuffa and the Fertittas and Dana White came on board. So I guess the long story short, the point is that by the time Dana White came on board, every rule that he follows to this day in the UFC was already set in place, and he had nothing to do but to simply follow those rules. And he wasn't the author of the rules. He didn't approach the athletic commissions. I mean, by the time he came on board, everything was set. We had a huge rules meeting back in April 2000, I believe, with promoters and representatives from the UFC. The Nevada Commission was on the phone, the Florida Commission, several other commissions, several other promoters, and everything was already set in place.
And have you had any responses from some of these media outlets that you've contacted in regards to, say, CBS? Has anyone ever gotten back to you and said, well, you know, maybe there was an oversight on our part, or...
Well, it's funny because basically the a lot of the mainstream media, when it's pointed out that, you know, that they're very inaccurate in their history, they just, you know, the San Francisco Chronicle, they did publish a correction. I haven't heard back from 60 Minutes yet. They were emailed the piece, mailed the piece, and faxed the article. I haven't heard back yet. I just think it's important when it reaches, you know, an audience like 60 Minutes or people that read these mainstream, just to know the true history of the sport, because it was the first show that was held under the modern unified rules or the UFC rules, whatever you want to call it, was actually held by the IFC in New Jersey, in Atlantic City. And at that point, you know, Senator McCain was, you know, out hugely against the sport. So was a prominent senator from New York, prominent neurosurgeon, Dr. Peter Carmel. There were, you know, the quotes like it was human cockfighting, it was as close to legalized murder as you could get, you know, and it wasn't sanctioned at that time in any state in the country. And when we decided to, you know, submit these rules formally and allow these shows, you know, Larry Hazard and I, you know, were called into the governor's office, and this is why I guess I take exception to someone improperly repeating the history, because, you know, they looked at us and said, go ahead, you want to do this, here's all the opposition to it, and there's a lot of prominent names and prominent people with important titles, and basically they sat us down in the meeting and they said, if anything goes wrong, it's you and you, and pointed to me and Larry Hazard. So I think we took a great chance for the sport, and you know, I think people should know that, because if this thing didn't turn out right, I mean, I don't know what would have happened, and I don't know which state would have been the first state to actually get this whole thing through, because at that point in time, you know, Nevada wanted nothing to do with it. Mark Ratner was an outspoken critic of it, and even appeared on Larry King Live with Senator McCain against the sport.
Yeah. Well, Nick, there's no question about it. New Jersey State, very storied and great history with combative sports, including mixed martial arts. And while we have you on the program, we're getting a little short on time, but I really wanted to talk to you and hear your thoughts on judging and sort of the criteria to judging and the education system behind judging. It just seems, and Brent and I go on about this, it seems like, unfortunately, we have to every few shows, because that's how long it takes between shows before there's another horrendous judging score, and most recently Carlos Newton versus Renzo Gracie, and people are all up in arms once again. What are your thoughts on the current judging system, Nick? Is there a proper educational system behind judges? Are they fully aware of what is true scoring in mixed martial arts, in your opinion?
I just wanted to mention one other thing for your listeners too. Started in early 2006 an amateur mixed martial arts program, and we've had probably about 15 shows already, and that's been wildly successful. We're trying to mirror the program, like in boxing, you have, you know, you an amateur boxer before you become a professional boxer, and there was really no outlet for that in mixed martial arts. And
what are the limitations on an amateur show? How are the rules different?
There's several limitations on what are allowed. They wear bigger gloves. There's in the case of a knockdown from a blow, the fighter gets a standing eight count, and then they're reset standing, so there's not an opportunity to ground and pound. And some of the striking to the head is limited, but it's just an opportunity for some of these fighters to get a chance, if they want to, from going into that style tournament before going into a pro-style rules tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But But as far as your question with judging, yeah, I was at the Mohegan Sun, so I saw the Newton Gracie fight right from ringside. The only thing I can say, I mean, the judging's always been controversial. I've been doing this for 14 years. It's controversial in boxing. The only thing we can do in New Jersey to try and help, I mean, we do have judging seminars. We will ask someone why they scored a round that way, and, you know, they do have to give us a good explanation. Commissioner Hazard is very strict about using officials, and he will sit somebody down if he's uncomfortable with their performance. I think some of our officials that we have in New Jersey is very happy. They agreed to use Dan Mergliotas as the ref of that particular fight, and I think Dan and we have another ref, Kevin Mulhall. I think they're great referees. Eve Levine started in the United States as a referee in New Jersey, and judges, we have individuals like Doug Crosby and Marlo Bittencourt and Eric Golden, and I think they're doing a pretty good job overall. But one of the things I think that we you have, I think you have a little less of the controversial scores in New Jersey just because we have so many fights and we keep assigning the same people to all these shows, so they get a lot of fights to score, especially some of these smaller mid-sized shows. You'll have 10 to 14 fights on the same card, and we'll just assign three judges, and we keep using New Jersey people and keep using the same people, and we don't use, unlike some other states, boxing officials. Even our inspectors for the fight, we don't use boxing inspectors. We treat it, the sport, it's a different sport than boxing, and it should be treated differently than boxing. And some of the controversial scores I've seen, I've cringed because they're using boxing judges and not people with a mixed martial arts background. I think that's the first step in correcting the problem.
And are you still committed to the, do you think the 10 point system is still the best system for MMA?
I think it's a good system. You know, be open to anybody else's idea of a good system, but if you actually look in the rules about how to score a round, I think it gives you a pretty good guide. You know, and if you're actually following that guide, I think you can score the round in a fair fashion and in the correct fashion.
Just to follow up my question quickly, while we've got you here, it would be interesting to hear now that in 2006 we saw three versions of rules in the highest caliber of MMA. We have Pride rules and the UFC modified rule or uniform rules, and then also the IFL rules. You personally, what is your impression seeing fights underneath all these rules? And do you think which is your favorite, and which do you think would be optimal for a true unified set of rules?
Well, we've probably had about eight sets of rules in New Jersey because we follow the unified rules, but we never disallow the promoter the ability to make it stricter. And certain promoters or matchmakers like Miguel Iturrate, you know, does the MFC shows here now with Bodog. He doesn't like elbows to the head, so he takes it out. And we don't have a problem with making it stricter. Some of the smaller promoters, they don't like the elbow strikes because of what it does to their insurance policies. Some promoters take out the knees to the head. There's a lot of different sets of rules. I like the unified rules. I don't have any problems with the elbows and I'm not saying, you know, me like I know anything, but I mean just based on when those rules were written, I consulted with several doctors and medical experts, and I think everything that's allowed in the unified rules is fair, and I think it's proven out over time, over the number of shows that we've had and everybody else has had, that thank God there really hasn't been, you know, a serious or horrific injury.
And I just just wanted to get back to the judging for just a quick second, because I know that this is kind of the hot spot right now in mixed martial arts. But you mentioned that in New Jersey State, it sounds like, you know, the Commissioner Hazard comes and he talks to judges that he feels not been up to par for in their performance for that evening, or a question why they scored a certain fight the way they did. To your knowledge, Nick, is there that kind of system of balance and checks in other states? Because and the person, the name of the judge now escapes me, but in Nevada, there was one judge in particular that drew the ire consistently of MMA observers for, you know, sometimes the fight would be scored in the complete opposite of the two other judges, and this happened several times. So do you know, is there a system of balance and checks to evaluate judges' performances in other states?
Well, I do know that in other states, and you mentioned Nevada, particularly Nevada, they do have a pre-fight and post-fight officials meeting. Where they do go over the scoring of each fight and each event, but I mean, I can only mainly speak for New Jersey. The good thing I think about New Jersey is that, you know, I have some mixed martial arts background and a more formal martial arts background, and Commissioner Hazard has a, you know, an extensive martial arts background, so. I think maybe the problem there is if someone gives you an explanation, you have to be able to evaluate that explanation. And unless you have, you know, knowledge of the sports and knowledge of the maneuvers itself, I think it would be easy to con somebody. So maybe the issue is that you have commissioners that aren't well versed in the different types of martial arts themselves.
Brennan, do you have anything else for Nick?
Well, I guess so. I have to congratulate you in New Jersey for the excellent job you've done. And I think one of the most important things that you said today is and the most important things that you've done is making a clear distinction between boxing and MMA and recognizing the difference between these two sports and the difference to have and the necessity to have experts in both, you know, underneath your commission. And I hope as soon as MMA becomes more popular across Canada and the United States, that other commissions recognize this as well, the distinction between these two sports.
I agree 100%.
Well, Nick, there's so many issues I'd like to get your thoughts on, but we are getting short on time here, so we really appreciate coming on the program.
Okay, thank you very much for calling. Okay. I appreciate the beer.
Take care.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred, new source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
Full Contact Fighter.
The undefeated, no-holds-barred, new source of the world.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Mr. Nabil Khatib, who's going to be fighting January 13th coming up at the Apex Fighting Championship, taking on Daryl Bonner. Apex Fighting Championship is going to be taking place in Gatineau, Quebec. Nabil, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
I can't complain. Thank you very much. Nabil, my first question for you, you're taking on a guy in Daryl Bonner who's got some experience. He trains with Steve Bergeron out of Edmonton, and that's more of a camp that's known for the Muay Thai skills. They do have some grappling programs there as well. There's no question about that. But from your research so far, what do you know about your upcoming opponent?
I know he's a good striker. I'm not sure about his ground skills. You know, I like to fight with guys with good hands and good, you know, good kicks. It makes for a good show. And that's what I like to do. I like to stand up and fight. I mean, if I have to, I'll take to the ground. You know, if a guy's stronger, faster than me standing up, I mean, it's obvious there's always going to be somebody, you know, stronger and faster. But if that's the case, then I'll take him to the ground. But I really would like to stand up and fight that way.
Yeah. Well, Well, this fight's kind of being billed as the number one contender spot for the Canadian middleweight title in Apex. Sean Pearson's going to be fighting Fritz Paul. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the Fritz Paul fight in just a moment. But first off, for you, where does this fight sit then, Nabil, in your career? Is this another big opportunity to get yourself back to the top ranks of the middleweight division?
Yeah, that fight with Bonner, of course, is very important that I win that fight, and it puts me back in the number one contender spot, and I want to get, into the fact Fritz Paul defends his belt this show, I get to fight him again. You know, the first fight I had with him was a very, very good fight. Everybody was, really happy with the show. Unfortunately, I didn't take the belt, but the crowd thought that I won the fight, and, the judges were, they saw it as Fritz Paul winning the fight. It was a very, very close fight. I don't take it anyway from Fritz Paul. I don't think I stood up enough with him. I don't think I threw enough punches. I mean, I think that's why, where my downfall was. But, this will give me the chance to, come back and take the belt away from Fritz Paul if indeed he keeps the belt. And if I do win my fight this weekend. So it's a very big challenge for me.
Now, Nabil, you mentioned that you like to stand up. That's something that you try to do a lot of in your fights. So maybe for people who aren't familiar with your background, Nabil, and your training camp, fill us in a little bit about your martial arts background and your current training camp.
Well, originally I really started as a jiu-jitsu practitioner, Japanese style jiu-jitsu, with a school in Ottawa, and I worked with them for many different people in Ottawa, and my main coach in Japanese jiu-jitsu was a gentleman named Bill Gatchel, who is out of 100% martial arts, but now I have my own school in Rockland, Ontario, called Team Bushido Martial Arts, mm-hmm. and we teach Japanese style jiu-jitsu, and we teach international style kickboxing. The kickboxing originally came from Johnny Terry, who was 23-time world champion kickboxer, who was my original coach in the kickboxing. But it was full contact style, and I sort of incorporated a little bit more leg kicks. So I like to work the leg kicks. So that's basically what my style is. I like to work the stand up and work the ground. But my main coach in jiu-jitsu, which is Brazilian jiu-jitsu now, is Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt Fabio Holanda out of Montreal. Okay. And I train with him, every week.
So, you currently reside in Montreal?
Oh, no, I reside in Rockland, Ontario, which is about 5 minutes from Ottawa, or 10 minutes from Ottawa, depending how you drive.
Yeah.
But, it's just a few minutes away from Ottawa, but I drive to Montreal every weekend. But now I have dropped to go train with them.
It's kind of been a common theme on this show lately. Brent and I have discussed the resurgence of traditional martial arts in mixed martial arts. You see some more traditional styles, techniques from karate and et cetera being used sometimes. And, I wanted to ask you, being a practitioner in the traditional Japanese jiu-jitsu and then later on, augmenting those skills with Brazilian jiu-jitsu, how much of a base did that give you, Nabil? How much did it prepare you for training Brazilian jiu-jitsu? Did you find that the transition was quite seamless?
Well, I wouldn't say seamless, but it definitely showed that, in order to be a really good fighter against someone else, who is also a good fighter, you really, really need to tighten up your game. I mean, my Japanese jiu-jitsu was very, very good. Against the average Joe, a good self-defense base, a good balance, good judo throws, that kind of thing. And, all the joint locks are there. But in order to tighten up your game, you really need to get into your Brazilian jiu-jitsu and your no-gi, no-gi grappling, that sort of thing. And, and your wrestling is so important in this sport. Mm-hmm. So, I think the transition was pretty easy for me, but it opened up my eyes and say, wow, there's a lot more to learn. But for someone to go from zero martial arts to MMA, it's a long and hard course. But I think it was a pretty easy transition from one to another for me.
Do you find then with that background? I know for years, several years ago, it seems as this debate is somewhat over. But I know even in my own personal experience, when you used to discuss mixed martial arts with some practitioners of traditional martial arts, especially if they were perhaps older, there was kind of a frowning upon mixed martial arts. There was kind of a disbelief still in those circles about its effectiveness and whether or not it truly was what martial arts should be. Do you still find that you run into anybody who has that kind of outlook on mixed martial arts you know, with people that you associate with through your Japanese jiu-jitsu days, or is that kind of a thing of the past now?
Well, fortunately, you know, the people that I deal with and the people that I know are very, very much into the sport of mixed martial arts, and they enjoy it, and they, you know, and it's helped that, it helps that they know me as a person, you know, as a friend and someone they deal with on a regular basis to, you know, sort of open up their eyes to the mixed martial arts. So I really, personally, I haven't had that experience. However, there is, you know, I know that there are, you know, unfortunately, there is some of the martial arts clubs out there that do look at mixed martial arts as a negative, as, you know, this is not tradition, this is not, you know, something that should be, you know, available to the public. But, I mean, I think the public that enjoys the MMA is starting to outweigh the people that don't. And, that's what we're looking at. We're looking at raising the sport, and that's as much as we can. Apex Entertainment is doing, you know, doing just that. They're doing a really good job. They're putting on some really good shows, and it's opening up the, you know, opening up the eyes of the public who, really don't know the sport. They're starting to really enjoy it. So I think it's, there are still some people out there that, you know, stick to the traditional stuff, and that's fine. That's up to them, but I think that they should, at least explore it, and they'll see that there's a, you know, a variety of things they can learn from it.
Yeah, and let's get back to the upcoming Apex card. Of course, outside your fight, there's some great, great fights, and I want to ask you about your opinion on Sean Pearson taking on Fritz Paul. Yeah, but there's Sean Kreisa is going to be fighting Terry Quinneville. That's a great matchup as well. Rebecca Sweeney is going to be fighting. There's a great women's match on that card. So there's lots going on. If you could take the role of predicting the outcome of that fight, having taken on Fritz Paul, and looking at Sean Pearson, who's got a strong wrestling background, and it's going to be his first fight in MMA since 2003, I believe. Do you have a right. call on that fight, Nabil?
I would say that, you know, Pearson's going to take Fritz Paul down, and it would just work him on the ground and sort of get him down and sort of work on points. I don't think that, you know, I don't think that Pearson will hurt Fritz Paul in any way, but I think he'll beat him on points. He may get a submission, but Fritz Paul is pretty slippery. You know, from what I remember, he was pretty slick. So, I mean, I had him on the ground a few times, and I wasn't able to submit him in any real position. I didn't have a chance. But, yeah, he wasn't that difficult to take down. And from what I know, Pearson is a very good wrestler, so he'll probably just take him down. And if he decides to stand though with him, I tell you one thing, he better have a solid chin, because Fritz Paul hits very, very hard. And he'll have a very, very tough chance. So I think that if Pearson takes him down, he'll win that fight by probably decision.
Nabil, you started your MMA career in 2005. You've had 6 fights, going 5-1, and you went undefeated until that last fight against Fritz Paul.
It really sucked, doesn't it? Sorry, just have to throw that in. I wanted to stay undefeated, but I mean, hey, that happens.
Yeah, well, you know, you fought 4 times last year. What are you expecting to do in 2007? Are you going to try to fight at least that much, or what's your game plan for 2007?
Well, I want to fight as much as I can. I want to try and get down to the U.S. and fight, you know, some shows down there and get myself some more experience and want to bring home a belt. I'm 37 years old now, so I don't have that much more time. I want to get a couple more years and I'll be good. So I want to be able to, you know, fight as much as I can. I'll squeeze them in. See, the thing is, for me, the more fights I have closer together, the better I get. The longer fights in between, I tend to, you know, not, I don't want to say slack off, but I sort of get rusty. You know, at this age, I have to keep working, keep training. And even when I'm not fighting, I'm always training. So, but that's the way I'd like to. That's what I'd like to do in 07.
Well, what was that like for you then? I mean, making your debut in September 2005, I guess you would have been 35 or 36. Was it a nervous occasion for you, or was it one of those things?
I was excited. It was a lot of fun. Apex was the first show I did, and they did a really, it was a good production, and it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed myself thoroughly. We have about 300 members in our school, and we probably had about 150 of them at the show itself in Montreal. That's where it was, and it was exciting to have them there cheering on, you know, cheering on their sensei and screaming Bushido the whole time. It was really, really good.
Every time we have fighters on from Ontario, we kind of like to get an update for the listeners who maybe remember us making note of this on the show, and it's well known in Canada, but maybe not so much for our American listeners, but the fact still remains that Ontario hasn't sanctioned mixed martial arts. And organizations like Apex do a lot of cards that feature fighters from both Quebec and Ontario quite often, and they have them in Gatineau or Hull. What are your thoughts, Nabil, on MMA not being sanctioned in Ontario, and where do you see that process being? Do you think that we're going to see some fights in Ontario anytime soon?
I think that, you know, Ontario is a very slow process. You know, after all, Ottawa is the capital of Canada. They're a little bit more, you know, reserved, and they have to be careful as to what they allow and what they don't allow, that kind of thing. But I think it's going to happen. It's just going to take time. I mean, they just legalized amateur kickboxing in Ontario, even though professional kickboxing was legal. So it's just a matter of taking the steps and getting enough people to sign petitions that I kind of think, and you know, trying to push it towards Ontario. And it'll happen. It's just a matter of time. I just can't say when. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's somewhat hard to believe. I know that there's some people who work for the government, work for the athletic commissions there, who certainly have even gone on the record questioning the safety record of mixed martial arts and citing that as a reason, and despite the evidence that supports the fact that mixed martial arts is certainly no more dangerous than boxing, if not, in fact, far more safer than boxing. It is somewhat to believe, isn't it, Nabil, that here we are in Canada, you've seen great successes for mixed martial arts in the Maritimes now, that's kind of in the latest portion of the country to have fight sanctioned. Quebec, it's a well-storied history now. Alberta's been, you know, heeled back right behind Quebec for several years. BC, now we're having some pretty big shows out here. I'm in Vancouver at Bodog. It is somewhat aggravating. I get tired of this, the fact that Ontario would be such a great market for mixed martial arts, and they haven't done it yet.
Like I said, you know, this is where the capital of Canada is, and it's going to be the hardest one to convince to get everybody you know, sanctioned, but like I said, I think it's just going to take time. It'll happen. I'm sure it will.
Well, Nabil Khatib, again, fighting January 13th, Daryl Bonner at the Apex Fighting Championship taking place in Gatineau, Quebec. Nabil, thanks for coming on the show, and best of luck on the 13th.
Thanks very much.